Of all the singer-songwriters who emerged from the Southern California folk rock scene in the 1970s, it was Jackson Browne whose music found the widest audience. His songs often spoke of great emotional pain, but his style was so gentle, his voice so innocent, that the pain seemed bearable, even worthwhile. A critic once wrote that Jackson Browne's songs had a sense of romantic doom about them, that they made lovers into heroes. But during the making of The Pretender, the pain of the songs hit too close to home. His wife committed suicide in 1976, leaving Jackson behind to raise their 3-year-old son, Ethan. It was, to say the least, a traumatic time in his life, and it sent him searching for something else to write about, something other than the sorrow in his heart. What Jackson Browne decided to write about was life on the road, a way of life that every musician knows all too well. But Jackson didn't want to just write songs about the road. He wanted to write and record them while he was actually touring, to create the album in the motels and backstage dressing rooms that make up the traveling universe of a rock and roll tour. It was an idea that had never been tried before, and the result was the most successful album he's ever done, Running on Empty.
Matter of fact, when I had this idea, I sort of wrote it out on a page, almost like a description or like an ad in the old-timey sense of an ad, you know. It wasn't called Running and Empty, but it was called, something. And it was going to be a live album with live versions of songs that had already been recorded and new songs and jams and some of the hilarious things that people say and some of the ridiculous things. It was almost like a Mothers of Invention album, you know, where you hear these ridiculous voices come in and it cuts to this little bit of tape where someone says something stupid and mysterious or... So it was going to be a real kind of mosaic of life on the road, and I thought there would be a double album, and I was much more interested in the songs that were the new songs. And when we started listening to things back, really within a couple of shows, everybody was really grooving to the new things and saying, man, this, you know, just, maybe the album ought to just be this, you know, maybe it ought to. I remember Russ Kunkel listening to this stuff next to a pool somewhere in Colorado saying, man, this is great, well, let's just do this.
to let them know you got it down. It's just another
Road from Jackson Browne's Running on Empty. The song, originally written and recorded by Danny O'Keefe. Jackson's version on the album was dedicated to Judy Durge, the wife of keyboard player Craig Durge.
Yeah, I knew that song real well, and I thought that it talked about life on the road. Not as it was for me at the time, because Running Empty was made at a time when suddenly we were playing, you know, like really big auditoriums and basketball arenas and the Sheds, and it was right at a time when we started to make a lot of money. But it really sort of typified what life was like had been like for the last 5 or 6 years, touring and, you know, sharing rooms or having two bands on a bus, or, you know, finding yourself with days off and absolutely nothing to do or no place to go or stranded someplace. It talked about life, a life that I knew really well. Certain friends of mine thought it was really wrong of me to do that song. Craig's wife, Judy. If Judy were listening right now, she would say, "That's right. That's right, Jackson. And you know it's right, and you shouldn't have done that song." But she gave me a lot of trouble about it, and for that reason, I think I dedicated it to her.
One of the things I've always wanted to know about the album Running on Empty was if other guests complained when they were recording songs in those motel rooms. Jackson Browne explained.
What we did is we booked all the rooms on either side and above. It was only a two-story motel. You know, on tour, you have at least, you know, 20, 30 rooms in the hotel, and we just made sure that we had all the rooms above and below and around. But there was this youth choir staying at that hotel, and we tried to get them to come sing on some of our songs, because I thought, that would be so great. There are all these kids, they're all over the place, and they were young, they were from about 15 to 18. As soon as the director of that choir, some church choir, saw all these kids out there in the parking lot with microphones and all us really mangy-looking ne'er-do-well types, you know, like standing around getting them to sing, you know, stuff that was definitely not spirituals. They called them back in and wouldn't let them, you know, have anything to do with this. Hey, you know, you're making me want to do this again. This would be, you know, it was a lot of fun.
She was standing there. She was sniffing on. Looked like she had nowhere to go, so I gave her my pass so she could get in and see the show. Well, she sat her there right next to me, and I got her a beer. While I mixed that sound on the stage so the band could hear. When they walked off stage, the drummer swept my girl away. But Rosie, you're alright, you wear my ring. When you hold me tight, Rosie, that's my thing. When you turn out the light, I've got a hand to me. It looks like it's me and you again tonight. Thank you. guess I might have known from the start she'd come for a star. By now you think I'd learn that it's who you look like, not who you are. Isn't that right, Archie? Rosie, you're alright. You wear my ring when you hold me tight. Rosie, that's my name. When you turn out the light, I've got a hand. Looks like it's me and you again tonight, Rosie. Looks like it's me and you again tonight. Looks like it's me and you again tonight, Rosie. Rosie. Rosie.
That's Rosie, the story of a young man taking matters into his own hands, so to speak. Here's one of the stories behind that song.
What happened was that this guy in our crew, who was the monitor mixer, had found this girl hanging around the load-in, and she was real pretty. And she looked kind of like, it's just like the song says, she looked a little bit stray. She sort of looked like she was, you know, didn't know quite where she was going, or maybe she'd get into the show. You know, she looked kind of like a runaway. And so he had her sit next to him during the whole show. And at the end of the opening, it wasn't in my band, but the opening act, the drummer who began noticing this girl through the whole show, and he's not the front, he's not in front, he doesn't have to do anything but play drums and groove, and he starts looking at this girl. And as he walks off stage, he just scooped her right up. Clean, you know, clean getaway. So what he did is Penny nailed the guy's door shut. So he's in his hotel room with this girl, and what you do is you put pennies in the door, like the little crack of the door, you know, all the way around the door, so it won't open. I mean, it's virtually nailed shut, because with that little space between the door and the door jamb filled with pennies, it really won't open. So the guy couldn't get out and had to call. And this girl was pretty young, I think. So it was his revenge, because he sat there in the bar really, really, you know, like saying, you know, I spent all that time talking to that girl, and I know she liked me, but how's she going to resist that handsome drummer coming by and sweeping her away?
Now, of course, the songs from the album Running on Empty are some of Jackson Browne's best-known work, but it's important to remember that when he performed these songs for the album, audiences had never heard them before. For example, the song You Love the Thunder.
People are really ready to hear what they know in a live show, and it's always a struggle to try to get as many of the new songs that they don't know as well into the show, even though you know that next year people will be really excited to hear that those too. I mean, the one that's on the record and the one that you know is the recorded version was sort of went over like a lead balloon, because no one had ever heard it. We were out there doing songs that no one had ever heard.
Oh,
Perhaps the most haunting song from Running on Empty, and certainly the most troubling, is Cocaine. The song was recorded in a motel room in Edwardsville, Illinois, with new bittersweet lyrics added to Gary Davis' original song. At the end of Cocaine, you can hear guitarist David Lindley saying, "It takes a clear mind." Jackson Browne.
And I'm sure what he was saying is, like, it takes a clear mind to be a musician, you jerks. You know, like, are we going to record this song like 60 more times and then go at it tomorrow night when you're really, you know, not too loaded? You know, what happens to be funny to you when you're abusing drugs is the pain. And there's certain real things that get said and everybody laughs about, you know, that are sort of ominous. Life changes. If you get straight, you know, I don't take drugs anymore, and I guess I've got a new version of Cocaine that I do live sometimes, that reflects the change in attitude and priorities. And a lot of people told me they really I'm glad that I did, because it was a very ambiguous thing, you know, our version of Cocaine on Running Empty. But I think it belonged on that record, because in those days Cocaine was sort of a lark. It was a laugh. It was sort of all-pervasive and not very serious yet, you know? We had not hurt ourselves too badly at that point, you know?
No, much of the damage was yet to come. Jackson Browne has no illusions about the dangers of drugs, particularly cocaine. I asked him if he ever regretted recording the song.
I don't like the idea of the song being sort of out there for people to, you know, misinterpret. I think that it needed to be updated, so I don't know how it'll come out. At some point, probably this live version will find its way onto a record. It makes a few, you know, sort of political points, too. Truth is that I've lost some very good friends to drug abuse. Lowell George, I see some of these amazing advances in technology, and Lowell was a great record maker and an inspiration to everybody that worked with him, and he had all kinds of tricks and did a lot of editing and did a lot of, you know, He did everything to make a record happen. I think that he would have really loved the technological advancements, you know, all these great home recording machines and effects and things. And I miss him terribly, and I think it's a real shame that he died, and I know that he would not have if we had not had such a feeling of invincibility about ourselves, if we understood how fragile we are.
Promoters, not for men. They always say they're gonna get you some, but they don't say where. Cocaine, all around my brain. Mama, come here quick. That old cocaine to make me sick. Cocaine, burn all around my brain. The other night in Boulder, I met this girl. She said that Aspen was the cocaine capital of the world. Cocaine, and all around my brain. Later on that night, about 4:15, Danny Korsmark comes knocking down my hotel room door. Well, if the cold came.
Down. to sing you a song that was written by Lowell George, myself, and a good friend of ours, Valerie Carter. Valerie couldn't be here tonight, and I'm sort of hoping that this song might represent her here. Maybe the hardest thing I've ever done is to walk away from you, leaving behind the life that we'd begun. I split myself in two, proud and alone, cold as a stone, rolling down that hill into the night. I could see the surprise and the hurt in your eyes, there behind each flashing city light. Love needs a heart I need to find. If love needs a heart like mine, love won't come near me, she don't even hear me, she walks by my vacancy sign. Hey, love needs a heart, hey, trusting and blind. Hey, I wish that heart was mine. A stone, I'm afraid to believe the things I feel. I can cry with the best, I can laugh with the rest, but I'm never sure when it's real. Can it be the hardest thing I've ever done, but apart from all that I hope to find? Where's the heart that's been looking for mine? I hope it finds me in time. Hey, love needs a heart, hey, heart I need to find. Hey, love needs a heart like mine.
I had this tour manager who's his name was Howard Burke, and he was, that may be the last tour that he and I worked together on, because he's too nice of a guy. He was really too nice of a guy to make it as a tour manager. Anyway, Howard was he had this great thing that he always played on guitar, and that's what we wrote Nothing But Time Around. And in the end, he couldn't be found when it was time to record this thing, and he just wasn't there, and it didn't, his little thing that we wrote the song around didn't get on there. It was this kind of cool guitar picking thing. It just didn't make it onto the record, but we had written the song, you know, to have him play it, like you would have had the road manager playing guitar on a cut. In the end, we went driving around, and Cooch played guitar. That's, we recorded that on the bus. Russell played a cardboard box for the bass drum. I don't know how they, I really don't know how they recorded it, because you couldn't hear anything in there above the sound of the motor. I mean, we were in the front where you would sit, you know, and the guys recording were in the back over the engine.
Rosie wasn't the only song from Running on Empty that was about the members of the crew. The most famous, certainly, is The Loadout, a musical tribute to the guys who set it up and tear it down.
I've always been real close with my crew. As a matter of fact, the guy who's my manager now used to be... Matter of fact, lines like, "The first to come and the last to leave," you know, come from him. His name's Buddha. And he's, you know, he's a guy that you wind up spending an incredible amount of time with people that you get to know because of the closeness, you know. You might not, you know, these guys work really hard. And they, and at least in those days, they did really make practically the minimum wage. They, you should see what these guys from Shoko used to drive around in. It's like a can. It's like a sardine can on wheels. They used to stack these guys like, they used to drive around in a camper, six guys in a camper. And they just practically, and they weren't in a bus or even a van, you know. And these guys would be leaving the gig, and you'd see them crawling into this little space, and they were getting in there for an eight-hour drive to the next gig, and I just think, oh, man.
The medley of The Loadout and Stay, an old song by Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, was one of Jackson Browne's biggest hits, and Running on Empty made it to number three on the American album charts. The song, according to Jackson, was just his way of saying thanks.
Simply what it was meant to do was just to say, we're here for you, you know, we're here because you guys came, because you bought tickets is why we're here. And the whole institution of the encore is a little bit false anyway, you know. I mean, basically, the thing is that you leave the stage and people clap to get you back. And they have to basically not clap at all for you not to come back. They barely clap, you know, you rush back, you know. And if they clap really strong, you sit and bask in it a little bit, you know, and then go back. But it's a way of sort of gauging how you're doing.
Detroit, Yeah. my good friend Daniel Keith. Joel Tett. This is a song of Danny's that I recorded on an album of mine.
I think everybody remembers that album.
Yeah, this is called The Road, and this was on an album. One of the songs that I knew that maybe that I could do that kind of a long album. Of course, I knew I had the words all wrong, and I couldn't find out until the record came out. So they had to listen by the way the words are. No, he's changing. There were words in the song that got changed because they needed to be changed. I had a friend who thought that line about the girls was just the most awful thing she'd ever heard him say. She said, "You don't think that, do you?" No. I didn't know that I could change your words on purpose. Anyway, he's changed them now.
Gamblers in the news. I found out, and This song, this was written by a minister named Reverend Gary Davis. And for many years I thought he hadn't recorded it because I was told he hadn't recorded it because he was a minister. See, I'm going to sing it for you now because I can't actually let the one that's on the record stand as it is. There's some updating things. So tired of walking around looking, feeling like shit, you decide today's the day I quit. Till later in the evening, you start thinking about what you're gonna do. But I wouldn't really use it even one more day if you could have shown me how I was helping turn a profit for the CIA. Okay.
Felt that there was something going on the road that people didn't really get to hear, not in a live record, and then not really in the show either. And I would find myself on a bus at 3 a.m. or in a hotel room or just sitting on the venue before the show, thinking, you know, this is happening. This is what I wish people could see. You know, so the idea was born. The idea of making, and originally it was an idea of doing. It was combined with the traditional idea of live album, which is to do everything people really know of yours and simply do it live. But eventually, only after a few concerts, you know, we just decided to do only the new material. So this was an album of all new songs, but recorded in various places, though, on the bus, in the halls, and in hotel rooms, even in rehearsal rooms and stuff. Yeah, it was, at the time, it was a new thing. No, people didn't, it wasn't easy to get the equipment together to make recordings, but we wound up carrying a machine with us for every gig and recording every show.
Look. Trying not to confuse that with what you do.